Welcome to Hot Breath Comedy Fam. On Monday, May 13th, I am teaching a clean comedy workshop. The last four I have taught sold out very quickly. So if you want to learn about clean comedy, the business side, where the line is, how to write clean comedy, go to the link in the description of this episode and we'll see you there.
Dude, it got so bad at one point. I was downloading the different, because there's, it's like, you know how the tech boom kind of happened in Austin. The tech boom been happened in LA. So there was probably like 40 different apps for delivering food. I downloaded multiple ones just to steal the food and delete the app. I did that a few times.
Just to steal the food?
Yeah.
You would order.
I would sign up, you know, fake email, fake name.
Order a delivery to you.
All the bullshit that they made me do, I faked it all. So the Instacart thing, I just took someone's whole load. You know, it's going what? To Beverly Hills. Take all of it. Doesn't matter.
Hot Breath. What's goody, Hot Breathiverse? Welcome back to Hot Breath, the show where you learn comedy from the pros. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers. And our guest today is a mover and shaker in the Austin comedy scene. This is a comedian, as we like to do here on the Hot Breathiverse, is help cultivate the next generation of great comics. This is a comedian pursuing his dream of comedy by any means necessary, moving from Louisiana to Texas to LA to now back to Texas in a new city, all in pursuit of this stand-up comedy game that we love to talk about. So without further ado, please welcome to the show, Hot Brethren and Hot Sisterin, Mr. CJ Landry, everyone.
Hey, how are we today? We're feeling good. It's a beautiful day outside.
It is.
The homeless are glowing out there, dude.
They really are. I've been in Austin a few hours, and that's the first thing that I noticed.
Is it really?
They were greeting us off the airplane. That's how they were handing out headphones, you know, as we got on the airplane.
Yeah, man, they'll bleed you dry out here, dude. I try to be nice, and then shit, dude, they are wanting all my money. Dollar for this, dollar for that. It's like a bathroom attendant.
I need to go check my car after this, now that I've been sitting in the studio. I need to go.
Yeah, you do. I don't know. I mean, it's a great city. The comedy is booming. I have lived in a few different cities for stand-up. New Orleans, I basically just did a couple shows out there.
Mm-hmm.
This was like, I started comedy 4.5 years ago. So I was in New Orleans for a minute, did that. I'm originally from Houma, which is a town known for the TV show Swamp People.
Solid.
Killer.
Yeah, that's a good IMDb credit right there.
Yeah, big one, dude. They know me. we're third cousins. But no, I did a couple shows in New Orleans, and I was like, okay, like that. I talked to a lot of comics, and they're like, you got to move. Like, you know, that was pretty much the first thing I got was like, you got to move. And this was 4.5 years ago. I've heard it's kind of gotten better now. They have like a little venue now for stand-up, because whenever I was there, they didn't have a single venue. They had no clubs. It was just like bars, bar shows, and called like bar rooms, and maybe like little box rooms or something, but nothing like a real club or anything. Now they have like a actual venue. But yeah, so then I just moved to Texas. I got a job in Dallas, and then I just started doing stand-up out there. I got pretty like a lot of like opportunities there pretty fast with Hyenas and like the clubs there. And then I was a year into stand up and I moved to LA 5 months before the pandemic.
Bruh.
Yeah.
But even the fact you were willing to move twice like that, like one, take the leap from a smaller scene into like a bigger scene in Dallas.
I know. Just even a small town was just crazy. Yeah, it was just weird, dude. Dallas shook me. I mean, just outside of just stand up, just Dallas alone just shook me, man.
Yeah.
Just being like, wow.
Buildings.
Millions of people. Whoa.
Wow, electricity.
Whoa, land that's not completely flat and almost inverted. Insane. and I remember going to work and being like, holy fuck, there's like thousands of cars they're all trying to go to work. They're all this is happening all at once. Like, I've been to other places, but it doesn't hit you till you're living in it. You're seeing it every day and you're like, Jesus Christ, there's so many fucking people here. DFW, 7.5 million people in the area, and that's double the amount of people in the entire state of Louisiana.
Wow.
So that was like, that rocked my shit, you know? And then moving to LA, I moved there hoping that I'd get a job at this studio, because a buddy of mine that I moved out there with, we fucking packed all of my shit in his Fiat and drove all the way to L.A.
It's two-door Fiat, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Drove all the way to L.A. Easily the gayest thing I've ever done.
And this was to work at the studio out there?
Yeah. It was a podcast studio.
Oh, yeah, because didn't you produce Jeremiah Wonders for a while?
I did. I helped produce. I was an intern, and at the studio, I was also delivering weed for that same company. It was Speed Weed. They called it Speed Weed, and they didn't really it was so weird. It was a Ponzi scheme, for sure. They didn't actually deliver. It was, looking back, I didn't understand it at all. I was like, how do they make money? Because they weren't apparently charging for studio space at all. They weren't charging any money for studio space. And then also they were like delivering weed to places, but they like only delivered to like a certain small little area, and they weren't really making money off that. So it was very unclear like how they're making the money. One time I asked the owner, I was like, so how do y'all like, you know, you seem like, you know, it's a lot of rent money. You have like a giant warehouse on Sunset Boulevard. That's where they did the pod, and that's where they stored all their weed. And I was like, man, it seemed like this is a lot of rent money for this place. Like, how do you make all the money? He's like, we have other business endeavors. I was like, all right. He drove like a Maserati. I'm like, shit's not adding up here. But
and then you're this intern coming in like, where's the money coming in, boss?
No clue. I had no clue. But yeah, I mean, L.A. was weird, man. So like that was 5 months before the pandy, and I was delivering weed. They sponsored, that same weed company sponsored Kill Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I kind of got to know Jeremiah and Hinchcliffe and all that crap, and kind of got cool with them. And I like helped record pods. I helped, I know construction a little bit, so I helped build like studio walls and spaces and everything inside the warehouse.
Oh, snap.
So I was like helping this company just like be a startup in like every way, as much money as I could make. Cause I was applying for so many jobs. I did the sperm doning thing. I told you about that. Mm-hmm. Found it on Craigslist. It was legit. and then I did obviously like Uber and DoorDash, all that crap you like kind of have to do when you don't have a job. And, yeah, it was really tough. I mean, it was tough before the pandemic. And I was just trying to get literally just like on open mics or any kind of shows. And I was like not getting anything going much at all until the studio started like helping me with the intern thing. And then Jeremiah was like, oh, let's give you like a spot like the Rec Room in Huntington Beach or whatever. And like, let's give you like, you know, they helped me with like a couple of spots. And then pretty much as soon as he started giving me spots, the COVID shit started. It was like full-blown COVID all over. And it was funny because I remember like going back home, and for Mardi Gras, which was like I guess February 2020, and being like talking to all my friends from back home, be like, yeah, I'm in LA now, I'm in a fucking studio, no big deal, I'm delivering weed, I get free weed all the time, I'm talking to the celebrities, buddy. Hey, if you want to call me, you have to talk to me, fucking at my time, you know what I'm saying? You have to set up appointments. Hey. And then they're like, hey, there's this weird vaccine, there's this weird disease going on in China. And I was like, what? No, like, how many people? That's like 1,000 people. I was like, oh, that's crazy. And I just remember like on the flight back home, like kind of freaking out about it. I was like, it's so weird. Like, you refresh the page of like Twitter, and then like the numbers just keep going up and up and up. And I remember being like, what the fuck is about to happen? And then I remember everyone telling me that that's going to be the last Mardi Gras that we're going to have for like a long time. They were like worrying about that, because then like all the big events were kind of like being canceled. And then it was like, I remember going back to my first day back at the studio in L.A. And everyone was being like, we're going to have to like sanitize all the mics, sanitize all like the equipment and the chairs and all the keyboards and everything. And it was about 2 weeks, and then the studio just closed down. Yeah. They ran Kill Tony out of it during the pandemic for a little bit. That's the only show that they had running out of there. And, once that was done, and it was just over. It was done. I was, like, totally unemployed. I couldn't even get unemployment money in L.A. because they were like, you haven't been living here long enough in California to collect unemployment. And then I tried to go through Texas, and they were like, well, you already have a California license, so we're not, you know what I mean? They're like, we ain't fucking with you, you fucking queer boy, you know? So that was like where and they just put me through the ringer, like, you're going to have to call 2 weeks from now and maybe try to get money, blah, blah, blah. So I was just like, no hope. I was straight up, and I still tried to tough it out. I was still like, no, it's going to last, you know, 2 months. And then and I was in LA like just Ubering, postmating for rent. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd do Instacart in the morning where I was like going to get groceries for people. And I would download other apps to do like the lunches, deliver lunches, and then at night I would Uber. And then they had this illegal mic on Melrose Avenue. It was illegal. It was this guy. He was a former Mormon pastor. And for somehow they called him Reverend something, Reverend Jones or something. And he was like this crazy looking. I mean, he's exactly what you're picturing. Just a overrun, fucking degenerate looking former pastor guy. Hair all grown out. Beard. He would He'd be like, yeah, it's $5 for 5 minutes, and pretty much I sell everything here. That's how he hosted the mic. He's like, I got everything in the back. He's like, I got beer, I got weed, I got everything else you could possibly think of. He sold all the drugs back there, but it was a wild show. I mean, it was a really good mic, like looking back, considering the fact that everything was closed down, there was nothing open. Mm-hmm. The fact that you could do a room where there's actual people there and they're like ready to watch comedy and they're all fucked up on a variety of different drugs. That's a pretty sweet crowd to perform for mics, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's the only mic that I could do. And I did that maybe once a week, during the pandemic. And yeah, that was, it got so bad at one point. I was downloading the different, because it's like, you know how the tech boom kind of happened in Austin? The tech boom been happened in LA. Uh-huh. So there was probably like 40 different apps for delivering food.
Oh, wow.
And I downloaded multiple ones just to steal the food and delete the app. I did that a few times.
Just to steal the food?
Yeah.
You would
order. I would sign up. You know, fake email, fake name.
Order a delivery to you.
All the bullshit that they made me do, I faked it all. I even photoshopped my license, the different picture. You just had to do that once, though. You just had to do that once, and then you get the. So the Instacart thing, I just took someone's whole load. You know, it's going to Beverly Hills. Take all of it. Doesn't matter. During the pandemic, they're ordering organic. It's not gonna hurt them. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I just took a whole load of groceries.
How much was it, would you say?
Like, that was probably like a $200 grocery bill.
And you're like, these are mine now.
It's mine.
You just said you didn't get the order, or you stopped doing
Instacart? Yeah, I was like, oh, they weren't there. And then you just pick some dumb excuse. They don't come after you either. DoorDash, they don't come after you. You could steal a bunch from DoorDash. They don't care.
I stole
a bunch from DoorDash.
Oh, you would just say I didn't pick it up? Or
they said, they weren't there. They didn't like come out or whatever. And here's the thing. They don't hurt the person. The worst that it hurts the person that ordered it, they're going to get their food a little late. They're going to have to reorder, but the DoorDash, they're going to pay for it. They're just going to spot them. So it's hurting these billion-dollar fucking tech whatever the fucks. That's really what it's – who cares about that?
Would you order, like, a bunch of food? Would you be like, all right, 10 pizzas? Or, like
– No, I wouldn't order because I'm just taking whatever the people order.
Oh, when you stole, though, I didn't know.
So I'm just taking whatever job comes my way. So if they come – if it's somebody orders some – usually my go-to is, like, wings or something nice.
Yeah.
something
high class. When it's wings, you're like, come to daddy. Yeah, yeah. Something classy.
Yeah, if it's, like, expensive sushi or something or whatever. And then, And hey, look, you know what?
By any means.
I did my job. I prejudiced it to only white guys' names. I was like, he's doing fine.
In Beverly Hills, too. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah.
you're getting your wings a little late tonight, bud. And then, yeah, I didn't care. I was like, it was whatever, man. I was going through the worst experience, I would say, possible in like modern times and
where
a modern civilization.
Finish that word. Were you about to say civilization?
Civilization.
Oh, okay. Dang it. I hate that I cut that off because it sounded like you were going za. Like
za.
You were about to say civilization.
Yeah, I'm on that civilization, boy.
I shouldn't have cut you off.
So, no, but yeah, right whenever I got like that experience that I was just kind of telling you, that was like my rock bottom. I was
living on a couch though? Like,
yeah,
where were you?
No, so
yeah.
I was living in a one bedroom house. My buddy was living in the bedroom. I was sleeping on a mattress in the living room. Wow. And So right whenever I was getting like rock bottomy, I was like swiping on dating apps and stuff, just really for hope, I guess. I don't know, just someone to save me. And it happened. I actually matched with this girl who lived in Beverly Hills. Her parents lived in Beverly Hills. Yes, her mom was a Food Network chef. Her dad was he was like some real estate guy that like operated in New York, and he'd like fly to like L.A. to like live, but he would do business in New York. And his dad was the former president of J.P. Morgan Chase. They were like so rich, right? And she was like Persian Jewish or something, money on money. I mean, their whole house was like, they had like gold and marble floors and shit. And it was crazy. I mean, I was putting on my best effort to do everything I possibly could to make her laugh and have a good time. And she was great. She was a great girl. Awesome time. But you know, it was nuts. She came. It was so funny, dude. She actually liked me because she came over to my place, saw the living condition
so
I was in.
She knew what was up.
Oh, she knew what was up. And still somehow your boy pulled it out.
Like, I recognize you. You stole our Instacart, I think. Is that your...
She's like, hang on, these organic grapes look fucking familiar. We order these every time. And then, it's so funny. She starts ordering all these items. You're into Persian coffee, huh? So kind of fast forward. I start working for her stepdad.
Huh.
At their house during the pandemic because all the office spaces are closed. He was working from home. She's doing like vlogs for Food Network from home, all this shit, right? And I'm like basically staying at her mansion in Beverly Hills. So I go from like sleeping on like an air mattress in a one bedroom, eating like chips and salsa for dinner, to like being in this Beverly Hills mansion during the peak of the pandemic. By the way, George Floyd protests going on. My streets shut down because of protests. I'm living in Beverly Hills, dude. I'm like living in a mansion. I'm playing golf. I'm at the basketball courts, dog. It's insane. I can't believe my life. And long story short, me and this girl start living. I live with this girl now, and I'm working for her stepdad. And her mom pulls me aside, and she's like, "Look, I know your dream's stand-up comedy, but that's a dumb dream." She's like, "That's like you could start working for this guy, and you could really be making like you could be making $1 million a year in 10 years." And I remember like thinking that I'm like, "Wow, this is a true crossroads for me. I could straight up throw all this away." And like just try to chase these spots at Flappers. That's what's on the table. That's the only thing. That's the only place that booked me. And then after the pandemic, that's the only thing I was really like, I know I got that.
Mm-hmm.
Or this Melrose spot with fucking Reverend Jones. And I ended up straight up telling her mom that I'm like, I'm not going to ditch something that I like. I've already invested. So like, I was like, I've already like cut my family off. I've like already like, you know what I mean, ditched friendships, already broke up with girls in Dallas to come out to LA. Like, I'm not going to just be like, oh, yeah, no, real estate's cool now. So she kind of took that in a way where it was like disrespectful, but I didn't think it was disrespectful. I just thought like I thought what she did was disrespectful. How are you going to tell me not to do my dream, whatever? So I kind of got in this big fight with her mom a little bit. And then I got in like kind of an argument with her. And then like that whole, like, it all kind of melted down. She went through my phone. She saw these Instagram likes, these DMs. And a lot went on.
No.
And so then I ended up losing my girlfriend, my place of living, and my job all in one day. Because I was working for her dad. I was living in the village and I was dating her. And like one of the saddest moments of my life was a comic friend coming, like, help me pick up all my shit.
From the mansion?
Yeah. And then I was like, and then I was going to go, knowing that the only place I had to go was this guy's couch. Because I lost my other place that I was sleeping in the living room. That guy moved away. He moved back to Texas because he was like, fuck LA. So I only had this guy's couch, who was a former comic friend of mine. So, yeah, And then I ended up living with a couple door guys at the store. I tried to postmate my way through it, tried to do as much Uber and whatever I could, but I ended up just like my car breaking down and I was just like, I'm just gonna go back home. So I went and moved back to Louisiana for like a few weeks. And then I started applying the jobs in Austin and just started trying to work and get up feature. I do a bunch of feature work in Dallas and San Antonio sometimes. So I just started doing that. I drove out to Dallas and got a new car. Thank you, Biden.
Flex.
And Stimmies.
What'd you get?
And I got a Camry.
Nice.
And then what was crazy was I ended up getting more road work than like ever. I started getting like more road work just because like the connections I made in LA and Jeremiah like started helping me out and like helping me make connects and stuff. And he's seen me go up, so he knows that I could do time and like know I got jokes and stuff. And I started like Airbnb-ing out of these like random rooms in Dallas. I did that for a while. Like wow. I was like living out of Airbnbs. It was like $20 a night Airbnbs that are just like horrible, weird rooms in a house type deal. Actually, I have a really funny story about that. You want me to tell you one?
Dude, please. All right. What is happening right now? What? I was like, oh, you moved to Dallas, you were killing it, and then you just moved to LA and all hell broke loose.
Had a world of trouble.
You're like, I was doing really, got into hyenas. I was really young in comedy. It was going great. So I wanted to reverse all of that. What's goody, Hop Breath the Verse? If you're loving this episode and all the other awesome content you get here for free, then you are going to love our brand new Hot Breath VIP list. All you got to do to join is go to hotbreathpodcast.com/VIP, and you're going to get exclusive access to not just podcasts, but also other content like unseen interviews, merch drops, discounts, giveaways, and a lot more exciting things. And this is for everyone. If you're an aspiring or working comedian or just a comedy fan that loves getting those behind-the-scenes nuggets, you're going to love what we have here at the new Hot Breath VIP list. So go to the link in the description or join at hotbreathpodcast.com/VIP, and I'll see you there. Speaking of comedy, I've got to shout out the network behind this show, Big Laugh Comedy. They have been killing it in the Texas comedy scene, producing some of the biggest shows live and also podcasts like the one you're watching here. And even bigger news, Big Laugh is hitting the road, bringing their best comedians and shows to a city like yours. So do yourself a favor, join their VIP newsletter and get exclusive access to not just when they're coming to your city, but also even more fun content and even comedy news. So all you got to do is go to blcomedy.com/VIP-HB or hit the link in the description. We'll see you there.
It was crazy. I started doing these Airbnbs and one time I was...
How do you rub your hair when you say this? It's so eloquent. I started doing Airbnbs and man.
One time it was really bad. It was really late. So I like checked in really late and it was kind of almost a cutoff. And I was messaging him. I was like, oh, please. And it looked like a Hispanic lady or something. And she was like kind of just sending me times. She wasn't sending me a lot of like paragraphs or sentences. So I was like, oh, I don't know what's going to go on here. I don't know if the communication was weird. You know, it was like just kind of like, okay. And then like 10:30, you know, like kind of that. And I'm like, okay. So then I go in. I have all my shit in my hands, like just like duffel bag and a fucking camera bag. And I type in the code of the door, and it's like a decently looking house. There's like a lot of those in Dallas where it's like a suburb of like really nice houses. They all look the same, mm-hmm. and they're all used for Airbnbs.
Huh.
It's insane. And they have like the little door code on the door. So I type in the door code. I open the door, an entire family, a furnished house with pictures on the wall of their family. A whole family is sitting at the dinner table eating dinner. As soon as I walk in with all my shit, I'm like, hey, and they're like, they don't speak English that well, and so they're just like, oh, why is he about it? They're just talking English, it's talking Spanish, and then I'm like, holding up my phone, I'm like, Airbnb, and they're like, we didn't know you were coming, blah blah blah, and then it's like kids around, and And I'm just like this gritty guy who's coming off the road kind of drunk, you know? And like, you know, room, yeah. They're like, oh, it's not ready yet. So then I have to sit there and wait with all my shit in my hands while there's like kids eating dinner and the mom like runs up to like kind of get the room together. And so I was just like sitting there with my stuff. And I didn't realize that this happened. This is just, it was all just kind of hitting me. Like, I can't believe people do this for money where they like let some random stranger guy into their house and let them stay. I go upstairs and I notice that the room right next to the room that I'm staying is like a 4-year-old girl's room. Yeah. I'm like, yo, this is the most bizarre, insane time of my life. Why would they do this? And I wake up the next day. It was so funny. I wake up the next day. No one's at the house. There's not a single person at the house. I'm like, dude, the level of faith in humanity some people have. I was, dude, I stole groceries from motherfuckers, yeah. Dude. I was thinking like, okay, this refrigerator looks pretty full.
Yeah. I'm like, case like, in the joint. Yeah.
I was like, whoa, okay. I washed my clothes and everything. And, man, just like the pictures on the wall, the family pictures. I mean, dude, it's insane. That just made me realize the level of crime that doesn't happen is kind of amazing.
So you didn't steal anything?
Didn't steal nothing.
Good for you.
Yeah, I was good. I was good. I only stole whenever my back is against the wall and I have no other options.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're Walmart. I still steal from Walmart.
Yeah.
No, Walmart gets no sympathy from me.
They stole from America.
That's right.
They stole a lot of jobs.
That's right.
Small business.
We steal it right back, baby.
That's right.
And if you want to know how to steal from Walmart, DM me. Give you the rundown on how to steal without getting caught. It's a pretty good system.
What's the most expensive thing you've stolen from
ever?
Walmart?
From Walmart?
Yeah, or ever.
Pots and pans.
Pots and pans?
Yep. Pots and pans.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice pans. Skillet pans.
And you flip them?
No. I just
you take them. You cook them. You cook your chips and salsa with them, of course.
I use them, dude. Come on.
I don't know if you flip them on Facebook or something.
No. I use the skillet pan to cook my stolen steaks that I steal from Walmart.
Oh, right. There we go.
I steal a really expensive steak. By the way, I buy a bunch. You know, I buy all the vegetables, whatever, you know. But the high-end bacon, high-end steaks, all that stuff, copped.
All right. Well, we'll slide through the DMs and see what the...
That's my merch.
What
just
the
tips,
game is.
It's just tips and tricks on how to stealing from Walmart for dummies.
Why did you leave Dallas to begin with? It sounds like everything was going so well.
It wasn't going as well as I kind of made it out to. I featured before I ever hosted a club.
Wow.
Because they, for some reason, they just wouldn't let me. They had a weird gatekeeper guy who, like, only wanted certain people to host the clubs there. And then the moment I moved to L.A. and then came back and just had all these names, like Tony Hinchcliffe and Jeremiah, tied to me, and the owner of Hyenas knew that, he just let me feature.
Oh, great.
And it was funny too, because I remember my first time featuring, it was very intense because there was like 5-6 comics who were like, you know, 10-year, some, I think one of them was like 15-year vet comics in the back of the room. So seeing their face whenever they found out that I was featuring, they were like, what? They were like, really? Wow. Well, good luck up there, you know? And then it was really cool. Like, whenever I was done with my set, they gave me all the props, you know? Like, it made me feel like all the shit that I went through in L.A. was all, like, validated in that point, you know?
Yeah.
Same with getting this mothership job, dude. The fact, dude, I mean, I showed up to Potluck at Comedy Store for every Monday, you know, paying fucking $15 for parking every Monday to do the potluck. Cause so you show up. I don't know if you ever signed up for potluck.
I'm familiar with it, but break it down. Yeah.
So you show up, basically you park, it's on Sunset Boulevard, which is, you know, hellish. It's a nightmare for any kind of like parking or any long-term staying there. And, you got to show up. I think sign up's at 5:30. You show up and you wait in a Disneyland ride line. It is like 150 people there. Same with here, by the way. Same thing. 150 people, and then it's even worse because LA is like, I mean, it's just clown city. I mean, it's like everybody who's anybody who's ever done even thought of the fucking hobby stand up comedy, they're like, oh, I'm gonna show up. Mm-hmm. They're gonna see me and fucking dunzo. Yep. So it's like a lot of these like kooky people waiting in line. And then, you know, I don't know how they got there. They just showed up somehow in a tutu. And I'm standing there in line with them. And the line is like an hour-long process. You know, you got to wait for everyone else to sign up. And then they do like it's like another hour or so until they put out the list. And then once they put out the list, it's like another 30 minutes till the show starts. So you're waiting there for like 2.5 hours. So that's why the parking's so damn expensive. Anyway, so I showed up there every Monday to perform for Adam Egit, to showcase for Adam Egit. That's the guy who's in the back of the room at the Comedy Store, the talent booker, who watches every single person on the open mic list to see if they're good enough to whatever, become a door guy, which is so funny to me. That was the silliest thing about the Comedy Store to me. I'm like, wow, I'm literally trying out to maybe become a minimum wage paid worker here.
You're paying 15 more than you'll make.
That's like, it. And then once I met the door, like some of the door guys at the store, where it's like, oh, you've been here for like 5-6 years working here, and like you really haven't like developed anything as far as like a career in the comedy. It's like you kind of just work here, and that's what you're known for, and that might become something else, but that's what you've like established and invested years into of your life into this thing that might not work out. It's like, I don't know, all that kind of like made me realize like, oh, Comedy Store is not like the end all be all. I should just like not go there every Monday. But I did that for like months on end, just like showing up every Monday, paying for the bills, signing up. And then whenever I moved back here, and I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna do feature work in Dallas, feature work in San Antonio. I'm gonna try to you know, make a name for myself in Austin, whether or not Rogan opens a club or not, whatever. And then for him to end up opening a club, bringing Adam Egit from the Comedy Store here, and then me somehow getting the audition spot to audition out of, I think it was 30 comics who auditioned, out of those 30 comics to then audition and then get it. Was like, it was the most like validating, like, wow, everything that I went through was like, it all made sense, yeah. You know, like it was all worth it. Honestly, if I wouldn't have got it, I probably would have been a dark, dark road for me. It just not have been validated in that way. All the past things that I did would have been so horrific for me, I think, to kind of take in and process. Cause I mean, it all happened so fast. I mean, everything with the pandemic and the girl and the thing, it's just, it all happened so fast. I didn't have time to process. I was kind of just running like I was on fire. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just kind of the next thing, next thing, next thing, next thing. Where it's like now I feel like I've finally been able to like slow down, just work the door at this fucking club and get up and finally like try to hone in on what skill I have up there.
So what, you auditioned to be the door guy?
Yeah.
So that was like, it was kind of like potluck where you perform and then they pick who would be a door
guy. Even know I know most of the people that got picked for the audition were people who consistently did the secret show at Vulcan.
Oh, okay.
And the secret show, like I just did Kill Tony one time here and then they got me on the secret show.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then since after that, I just kept like getting back on secret show. Because also Brian kind of knew me from LA whenever they did the Kill Tony thing in that studio. So that kind of helped. But yeah, I mean, I think like most people that were either affiliated with Secret Show or knew of through Secret Show got the audition. But which is, I think, a pretty fair way to do it. I mean, Kill Tony definitely cultivated like who's out here, who's doing good kind of mm-hmm. people, especially if you get on Secret Show. And you're consistently getting on Secret Show and doing well. I think that's like how they chose it.
Wow.
You know?
Now you're in.
Yeah.
You're in the mothership.
Yeah, dude. It's
you're
weird.
Like in. That's comedy mecca.
It is. It's gotten strange.
It's gotten strange already.
It is. I mean, there's a lot, you know, a lot of people that pop in, the big names, you know, they mm-hmm. post it on Instagram all the time. It's a crazy feeling. It's a crazy feeling to even be on some of those posts. That's like another weird thing. To be like on some of the posts that like where it's like Rogan, Ron White, you know.
Oh, and like a swipe and you see the
yeah,
images.
And then it's
yeah.
like me on there. You're like, yeah. Whoa. Yeah, it's crazy. But No, yeah, I mean, it's also, like, really hard. I mean, being around so many, I get real hard on myself with stand-up. I mean, I get, like, I'm like, crazy with that. I get down in the dumps, dude. Terrible.
Like, what? Like, how
sad,
so?
Joel?
Like, when you bomb, you get, like, depressed?
Oh, so, I
lay
mean.
Lay on the couch. Let's have a moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do the bombs make you sad?
They do. They get me so sad. I get, like, down on myself, like, real bad about, like, really just, like, I think comparing is, like, the, obviously, like, just the downfall to every creative outlet, honestly. But, yeah, just comparing yourself and stand-up is tough, man, because you kind of can't really, you, like, can get better through, like, inspiration of other people, being like, oh, I like what that guy does. I'm going to try to do more. Like, you, like, sometimes can get a tool there or something maybe to kind of transform and maybe become a little better, but I mean, there's some people that are just so different that there's no way that I could ever be that, you know?
Yeah,
like Jim Carrey, for example. I'm sure whenever, you know, people are coming up around Jim Carrey, it's like, I mean, I'm never gonna be able to do that, you know? Like, that's like a whole different world. And there's a few guys out here that are like that. They're like so different, that work the door at Mothership, that are like, are so different, they're so like out the box, like, you, like, just different. Just who they are, how they approach stand-up is just so much more different than the way I approach it. And it does kind of get me in my head sometimes because they do real well and they're, like, beloved in the scene. And then it's like, should I be, you know?
It sounds like you're beloved, though.
A little bit. I mean, I'd say I'm working my way up there, but it's like there's so many good comics here. I mean, you know, there's – dude, Josh is amazing. You know, there's, like, so many good comics here, man. There's, like, really good comics here. There's really good comics here. Like, it's
really
crazy.
But I'm sure
there's
comics listening to this, like, oh, my gosh, he knows Jeremiah Watkins. He knows Tony Hinchcliffe.
Sure, yeah.
He's working at the Mothership. So there's people listening to this, like, yo.
Yeah. But there's a lot of levels to it, you know. Of course, you know that. There's, like, a levels to it. And I guess it never stops. But I think I don't think what I'm talking about is necessarily my, like, position.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about just straight my delivery and how good I am on stage. That's all I'm talking about.
Okay. Not
yeah.
maybe people's progression and career, but
no,
more like their
skill
set on stage.
Yeah, that's like all I'm. That's all I really care about is like just how good I am on there. Like it, more than fame and money and position of status. Like it's just like how really good you are. And it's weird too, because you kind of other people admire different people. Like I feel like some people admire like a Robin Williams-esque like alt kind of comedy where it's just kind of nonsensical and maybe doesn't even make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I respect that, but I don't necessarily admire that. I admire people like I don't know. I guess like a recent one for me is like Shane Gillis, because he just keeps coming here and just like kind of resetting the bar for what killing is, I think, in my opinion.
Because
every time I've seen him, it's just like, it's disgusting what he does.
Really?
You know?
I've
yeah.
never seen him live.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Dude, he did a sold-out Vulcan show here. I don't think I've ever seen anyone get so many applause breaks.
Really?
It's just, it was disgusting.
And you've been doing it 4 years?
Yeah, 4.5.
Okay, so he's been doing it over 10 at least.
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it, you know, it's a marathon
for sure. But
well.
what kind of blows my mind is I've been around a lot of comics who've been doing it a long time, and just how you meet people who've been doing it 15 years, and they still don't even come close to what Shane Gillis does.
Yeah,
not even close. Not even
yeah.
a little.
There's
bit.
Always outliers.
It's also just not even. It's not even just like what he does. Because here's the thing. For the most part, the guy's just standing there delivering jokes. And they're not even jokes, they're bits. He's a bit master. He's not a jokey joke guy. Like a Mark Norman's like a jokey joke guy
right.
where it's like
yeah,
next
yeah.
joke, next joke, next, which is kind of like a delivery I'm more familiar with. I think my style's more like not necessarily set up. It's like a set up punch tag
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
style.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Gillis is just... He just stretches these ideas out where there's punchlines all throughout and act outs in it. And man, it's a beautiful thing. Just kind of watching him over and over again, getting the chance to watch him over and over again, how he approaches every set, and just breaking down his bits as I watch him over and over. He's an anomaly. He really is.
I mean, I could say from personal experience, it probably took me 8 years to just figure out to just focus on what I can control.
Yeah.
And not worry about what everyone else was doing or worrying about why this booker didn't reply or this festival or whatever. And just focus on, well, what can I control? I can control how much I'm performing, how much I'm writing and preparing and things like that. And that's when I started to feel like that negativity or that self-inflicted negativity all the time. If I let go of that pressure of focusing on what everyone else is doing and just like, well, what am I doing? What am I doing to change how good I, that person killed? What am I doing to be able to kill like that?
Yeah.
And just focusing on the progress of that and just knowing I'm putting in the work that will lead to that. That's what helped me personally. Cause I feel you on just like, you just want to be there. I mean, you just want to kill, you just want to be undefeated. You want to be like an Olympian that just can murder at all times.
Yeah, and I just want to get over what I really need to get over, I think, for myself is just kind of beating myself up over the jokes that work and I'm sick of. Because what happens is I'm sure a lot of people that listen to this are stand-ups, but like, you know, when you're new, you're like, oh, you got 10 minutes. I just got to do that 6 more times. It's over, baby. No, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. You got 10 minutes. You realize that's fucking 3. And then,
at best.
And then you try to write a new 10 minutes and you're like, that one's fucking, you know, too long. I should cut it down to 5. And then you do like really hard. And still, I mean, I'm at the point where I've done 20 minutes. I've done 25 minutes. That's a bunch. I've featured a bunch, like a lot. And open for big names, all that shit. And then you go do a spot here at Vulcan, like I'm about to do tonight, where I'm following Fahim Anwar.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize what your A shit is, what you have melted a room with, full of drunk people in Fort Worth that don't know anything. Sorry, Fort Worth. that you think is top of the line. Top tier A is really C plus at best. And that's cold hard facts that you gotta swallow whenever you've been working at something for 4.5 years and you think like you're kind of getting on to something, you're catching a wave, you think you're somewhere. But then you follow Fahim Anwar and I know him. I know a lot of his material very well. I've opened for him a bunch. I've edited his videos for money whenever I was down bad. And I know a lot of his material. I know tonight he's going to do brand new stuff that he's like kind of working on, that he's been working on the last 6 months, and he's probably going to bury me with that. You know what I mean? I'm going to get laughs. I'm not saying I'm not going to get laughs. But I'm going to be fighting the entire time to be like, "Hey, I'm good. I'm pretty good at this."
Yeah.
The whole time. And that's what stand up is to me. It's just like it's fun. I love it, but it's also like it is a bitch, man. Like it's a bitch. You will take something that you think is gold, that works, that a fucking video that went viral, and you're like, this is who I am. This 5 minutes right here, this is my voice. And 3 years go by, and you're like, you don't even do it because you know it's fucking hack. You're lame. You're dumb. They forever thinking that's good, and that's what happens. You like straight up break down into like just like realizing that you're not as good as you think you are. That's like it's just a humbling. It's a constant humbling thing.
Well, you are as good as you think you are.
Maybe, dude. Is that real? Oh God. Therapy with Joel.
There's one way to look at it, though.
Is that?
I mean, it's perspective. Yeah, you could say Fahim is getting his A-plus laughs, but, like, your laughs, yes, if you do something for longer, you're going to be better at it. But at 4.5 years, I was hosting an open mic on the patio of a coffee shop for $20 and free coffee to, like, homeless people. I mean, I wasn't doing all this cool feature work, open up for all these people and, like, getting all these amazing reps. You know, I was grinding it out. Drove 12 hours for $50.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, at 4 years, what you're doing is, for even for someone, me being in the game so long, it's astronomical how fast you're moving in this game. So you can look at someone like Fahim, who was in the trenches for years. He came up in the comedy store just night after night after night after night after night after night. How long have you been doing comedy? He's probably done that on stage. He's probably done 4 years on stage.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? So yeah, you can compare yourself or just learn from what he's doing and be like, yeah, one day I keep doing what I'm doing. I see what's possible and not, oh, look at him. Look, that's for him, not me. I'll never get there.
Yeah.
It takes time.
It does take time. It's also the bitch is, I've realized a real hard thing for me is coming up with stuff, like getting inspiration for something and you try it out and it works and then doing it again and it just bombs. It's, I swear to God, it's the closest thing I've gotten to wanting to commit like mass suicide. Just not suicide, mass homicides. Yeah, I go dark.
You've got the hair for it, too. I could see his mugshot. I could see your mugshot that
just
is.
Like,
yeah.
No, but I'm saying, like, just like whenever fucking joke that I just did works and then it bombs, I want to go out like Scarface. I swear to God. I just want to be like, fucking why? Why? It just worked. I just had it. And then like I closed on this joke. And then you do it and people are like, what the fuck? Fuck are you thinking?
But it's not just, that's for all of us. That's, I know. It's not just you that
I have an anger
to.
Problem.
But I'm just letting you know that happens to all of us. Or we have a bit that worked forever and now all of a sudden it stops working.
Yeah. Well, does this happen to you where you like over, what the people I'm like envious of are people who don't even have the thoughts. The people are just, I'm great. Or like, I'm like, they're just, they kill every set.
People with like self-esteem?
You mean? Yeah. People with just unshielded self-esteem where they're just like, yo, I'm the shit. I wish I had that. I wish I had a little bit more. Not all that. I'm not saying that I wish I had like just like, you know, just, you know, no limit of I'm the king. I'm the greatest that's ever touched the mic. But I wish that I was like a little bit more like I am good. My jokes are good. I'm fine. Everything's good, but I have this intense pressure on me, and people tell me to stop being so hard on myself, but I literally don't know how. I just it's not like I'm actively wanting to be hard on myself. It's an actively like trying to not be, and it's tough.
I find it helps me if I focus on the like the process over like the end game. So it's not like, oh, I'm killing, I'm amazing, but it's like, oh, I'm working hard and I'm seeing progress and I'm actually doing the things I need to do to get to where I want to be. Mm-hmm. I'm not there yet, but I know I'm doing the things. I'm doing the open mics, I'm writing jokes, I'm working on myself as a comedian and focusing on the actual work instead of the end result.
Mm-hmm.
It takes that pressure off to just focus on, well, are you doing what you should be doing to get to where you want to be, which is this amazing comedian, which me looking from this side, it sounds like you are.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Dude, I know the writing is so hard.
It takes, dude, I mean, I've interviewed people 30 years in the game who were like, I'm still trying to figure it out, or I'll still have self-doubt.
That makes me sad, but
okay. I mean, hey, I'm just saying you're ahead of the game because you're already there.
That's
what
true,
I'm saying.
Yeah, you got to get over this mentality, I think. I'm slowly getting over. I just, I'd like to, you know, I'd like to maybe be able to do more like things that I respect, like I guess. Like just more. I want to get rid of like any kind of jokes that I kind of like just over. I don't have a lot of sex jokes. I have like the sperm donor thing, which I think is my grossest joke. It's really like a bit. It's like 3 minutes, but it's well crafted, dude. I worked a lot of fucking hours on it, man.
I believe you.
But I
and it's unique to you and it's authentic.
Yeah, and it is, and it's like a personal story of mine and it's fun, but it's like, you know, it's I just want to not talk about classic topics that people talk about, which I think I maybe put too much pressure on myself to not do, maybe. But because I see Fahim, you know, I watch a lot of Fahim Anwar. Fahim Anwar is amazing. If you don't know who he is, Jesus.
Amazing. Yeah.
He's so good.
Yep.
But he touches on a lot of topics that, like porn, you know what I mean? Like stuff that's been talked about 1,000 bajillion times. But he still does a good job of it and makes it good. So I guess I admire that too, but I don't know. I guess I'm really in my head about the topics I touch on, and then like the jokes being like lame or corny.
But you're in control of that.
Whatever, I know. But it's hard to have that gauge too, because it's like it's subjective really sometimes. What is kind of corny can sometimes be brilliant to some dumb motherfucker in Fort Worth. Sorry, Fort Worth. God damn it.
If you're paying the bills, like, you know, if you're paying the bills,
let me spread the hate.
You can do some of these jokes to pay the bills, but like when you're out working out material, you're working on stuff you want to be doing more.
That's a good point. Yeah, I've learned that too. I've learned to have like a road act, something that's on a work.
Yeah, because I came up doing a lot of like hood rooms, and I would do like the race stuff, and I would be the white guy, and it would kill. And then I got to a point where I was like, well, I don't want to be doing this. So I just had to start to kind of wean myself off of that. And it wasn't kind of like I ripped the Band-Aid off. It's like, oh, maybe I'll do a few and then just do some silly marriage jokes or whatnot and kind of start weaving it in that way and get the confidence to step out into this new kind of point of view I'm trying to bring to this stage. So it's all incremental, but you having the mindset and the intent to do it, now it's just, all right, instead of this sex joke, I want to do this personal joke that I think is funny to me and start just introducing them that way.
Yeah.
Because it's all incremental, dude.
Yeah, and it's been tough too, like of like just learning how to, I think what makes good comics great, I started with Ralph Barbosa. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was he was like already 2 years in and like one funniest comic in Texas 2 years in whenever I like just started, you know? So like I kind of heard about him in the fucking wavelengths and, just kind of like the myths of Ralph Barbosa whenever I just started and people were like, ah, he's really good. And it's kind of funny. I remember a lot of comics being like, yeah, he's good, but he's got a kid, so he's going to be fucked. and then he's like become like a fucking legend now. It's so funny. But like, you know, watching him kind of progress, like, you know, you watch different people, but like to watch him kind of come up was so interesting to me because he didn't do a lot of mics. He wasn't like a mic grinder guy. I'm sure he had like a period, maybe a phase of doing that, but he never, from what I saw, was a mic grinder guy. But every time he'd come to the mic, he'd have 5 new minutes that work pretty good, you know, and that he's working on. But I've learned, like, what makes good great is, like, people who can take a new idea and make it, like, a 5-6 right out the gate instead of going out there with, like, a 1 or 2 where you're, like, you should have ran that by somebody or something, you know, first before you just walk up there and yell it. Yeah. And so what happens is you become good becomes great whenever you figure out how to take that new idea and it's a 5-6 is the first time you do it, and then learning how to make it at 9-10 fast. You have to become like a machine. You know, I've learned that's like kind of that's what makes good great. That we're watching Ralph slowly figure out how to do that was. Cause he's so brilliant, man. I mean, for him to do different, he did a totally different set on his Don't Tell than his, I think his Comedy Central taping or his HBO tape. He did totally different sets.
Wow.
So like that for me was like, oh, you're like, he's on a whole nother level. Like where he's so ready for the moments that are coming ahead of him. It's not even funny, you know? So happy for that guy, though, man.
I'm happy for you, though.
Thanks, man.
I'm happy for you.
I appreciate you.
You're doing good things.
Thank you, Joel.
Doing big things.
Thank you, Joel.
And Papa Joel. You know what you want to do.
Thank you, Papa Joel.
Very welcome. Come sit on my lap. This is when we get canceled.
You do have a let me be your neighbor vibe today.
Like Mr. Rogers talking about, I need to bring out a puppet. Come on now. Come on, CJ. We don't like the angry, the loving llama. Come on.
But he's great, man. Obviously, if you don't know Ralph Barbosa, look him up. But he's been a funny one to watch. You know, he was so young when he started, 22 or something like that, 21. And then he had so much go on with this kid. And then he was a barber. He cut my hair 2 years ago. And I remember him being like, what's your goals for comedy? And I was like, oh, man, it'd be just so cool if I could, like, you know, point to a house one day and be like, I bought that with jokes.
Yeah.
But that'd be cool, right? And he's like, I feel that. He's like, yeah, man, yeah. You know, he's cutting my hair. And he's like, yeah, I want, like, Ferraris, mansions.
Nice.
I remember him saying that. That's I was like, sick. Oh, damn, that's cool. And now he's, like, doing it.
That's
I remember at that point, I remember thinking at that point, I was like, what a fucking idiot. A little ambitious there, Ralph. You're in a barber shop, bud. And then now he's just fucking, yeah, he's just insanely on fire.
Are you on your way?
Yeah, yeah. But, no, yeah, he's got a really good ability of, he used to always write clean. He was always clean. He was clean for the longest. I think he's like started to curse a little bit more now, but he never talks about sex or anything like that. But I don't know. I just respected the fuck out of that. I thought that was really cool. And I did a clean show recently. Forced myself to do a clean show.
Yeah.
Did 12 minutes clean. It was fun.
That's
a bunch
great.
Of old people. It was a bunch of old. It was literally just all old people.
It was like a retirement.
Oh, AARP crowd.
AARP.
No, kidding.
Oh,
but
like a corporate gig. Okay.
I don't know what it was. It was some weird like group that this lady, this comic out here, Jen Fulweiler. She started this thing at Cap City where like she just has like a some kind of community where they just want clean comedy.
Is you
want
to do more clean stuff? Is that well? You said less sex stuff. You
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
So it's like, what are you wanting to?
Well, I don't know. I guess I respect Nate Bargatze so much.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that.
Nate, over 20 years in the game, now he's selling out arenas, and people are like, oh, I want to be like Nate.
I know.
Well, people don't see him, you know,
grinding
out
in
New
York.
York.
I know.
So, you know, I mean, it's easy to look at these people and be like, I want to be like that, but it's, you know.
It's a long road.
They earned it.
Yeah, for sure.
And you're earning it.
Yeah, for sure. I just need to figure out how to like stop saying fuck on stage so much. God, I say, especially doing new stuff.
Well, make it your goal tonight.
I know. New stuff.
What about tonight? Don't say it on
I
stage.
I know. New stuff. I'm always just like, yeah, and this fucking thing, this fucking. I'm just saying it. So yeah. I'm listening to
the
recording. I'm like,
you're
God,
the guy doing
stop.
The 1-2 stuff.
What
yeah,
you
you're
doing?
The guy coming out there with the 1-2 yelling stuff.
Why are you saying it so much on stage? I get so mad at myself listening. So is that that's one thing. Has listening your recordings of your set or videos has it? Do you think it's been easier the longer you
it's
do it?
Torture.
Or, yeah.
It's torture.
Is it
every
harder? Because I feel like whenever I first started, I would always like you know you get like one room pop and you're like oh I'm about to re-listen to that 5 times before bed.
Yep.
No, it's like I could hardly press play.
It
it's
hurts.
Hard.
If I don't listen to it on the way home, I'm most likely not going to listen to it. So
yeah.
I try my hardest to force myself to listen to it on the way home, but I'm not perfect.
I also feel like I have a pretty good sense of knowing what happened. Like, especially a short set.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, I'll re-listen to feature sets, I think, more than anything, because it's like, I'll fast forward through, like, moments, but, like,
I'll do, like, 2x, though. I listen at 2x.
Okay.
I don't, I won't do the
Speedy
full.
Speedy Joel.
Unless something's killing, I'm like, let's 2x
That's
this.
So funny.
We get to the gist of it. Yeah. And it's just me in my car. I'm amazing. I'm amazing.
That's true. At 2X, you seem like you get double the more laughs as much as
it's, these LPMs are through the roof.
Laughs per minute is insane. Yeah. That's hilarious, dude.
Well, I mean, CJ, I'm excited for you, dude. And I think,
thanks,
you know,
man.
Give yourself some credit.
Ah, thanks.
But it sounds like you know what you want to work on. It's just actually doing it instead of.
Yeah,
complaining about it,
and then it's just you know it's comedy. Like this part is so hard for me, like what you're just describing.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, I complain a lot, but I just have like a I have like
great, buddy. I'm just
it's
kidding.
Like a it's like a it's just it's weird how stand up has become like so many things, you know,
mm-hmm.
like it's so many things. Like you got to know how to do the video shit, you got to do the content crap, and then on top of that, I'm just trying to really freak out on my next 5 minutes.
But you
know,
don't
it's
have
like a
to
weird
do all
thing.
The content stuff.
I know.
I mean, where, you know.
I talked to Fahim about it one time and he had good advice where he's like, you know, you don't have to figure it all out at once. But it's also like at the same time, it's like I don't really want the fame thing either. That's like totally not even it's not even like it's really not sexy. I've seen the comics that are famous and it's kind of it is a burden more than a a blessing. I mean, the money is good, I'm sure. Like, it's fun, but, like, it comes with a lot of fucking pressure, responsibility, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just remember seeing, like, I don't know. It was, like, a good example, I guess, for me. Like, I don't know. Theo was a good one. I saw Theo one time. Like, I had dinner with him one time and after, like, a show at Addison Improv. And just kind of, like, the VIP thing after, like, the show where it's, like, a line and, like, people are coming up to him. It's probably really cool the first time it ever happens, right? The first time it ever happened for him, it was probably dope as shit. People coming up to him on their phones are like, oh, Theo, bro, you're my fucking buddy. Love you. Oh, taking videos and selfies with them and shit. And it's like, that's probably cool the first time. But then, like, dude, it's after, like, the 30th, the 40th city you're doing it. And it's a lot of, like, very, it's a lot of pressure to, like, I'm sure be, like, funny, be nice, be, like nice to the men.
Was
it's
he
like
talking about this at dinner? Like, how it weighs on him? Yeah.
Yeah, and how he just, like, he was sick of it. In that moment, you know, and like just kind of like tired. I don't know if he's always still sick of it or whatever, but like in that moment, you could tell he was like he laid out on stage just like to rest because you just did two shows, you did two VIP meetups for each show. Mm-hmm. So it was a line of people taking pictures, chit chat, small talk, the worst thing ever. And you have to play nice and pretty much fake you for hours.
Well, he stopped the tour in the middle of it because of think of his anxiety or his mindset, right?
It's a lot, dude. And I feel like that is like the kind of like the – that's kind of what I mean. Like whenever I see that, I'm like, that doesn't look fun. I'm sure the money's good. You can make it fun, I'm sure. But it's like – I'm sure it just drains you, you know? But I know a lot of people aren't doing VIP meetups after shows anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just like what I don't – think of is the pressure for sure coming up with new stuff, trying to tour, and then like, oh, you're touring with the same thing and you can't tour with the same thing, you gotta come with new shit and all that stuff. It's
but you're just focusing on getting good at stand-up
for
right?
sure. Of course,
I mean, it sounds like you said you're worried about the clips and all that, but it's like you're just focused on getting good
but
at
like
stand-up.
Of course, that's but I know thing. A lot that's what I'm focusing on. I'm putting stuff out here and there, you know. I'll put up videos sometimes, I'll put up like pictures or whatever of like my journey and stuff, but like, you know, and try to make that fun and funny. But I mean, you know, I just have friends that have popped really hard online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then and they're not ready. And then they're like, you know what I mean? But then they just take a bunch of friends with them on the road so that they can do a bunch of time in front of them so they don't have to do as much time. But then what happens is you don't make any money doing that. There's not a lot of money in stand up. I don't know if you've heard.
Yes.
So then
I'm familiar with that concept.
If you take four guys on the road with you, you're splitting a lot of money in hotel rooms and that, and then it's that, it's not sexy at all. It's like that's what I'm saying. It's not like that's not why we're doing it, you know, to share a hotel room with three other dudes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, yeah, I'm trying to focus on the right things and then hopefully that'll add up to something else. That's what I want in my mind is a good career.
Well, I can say that there's no right way. There's only your way. CJ.
God, I feel like I've run 5 miles in my own mouth this fucking show.
Yo, I gotta. So much. I mean, we've done a lot of these.
It's a lot of talking.
This is one unlike any other.
Really?
Yes.
That feels makes me feel good.
This is amazing. This was amazing. Yeah, this may be my favorite one. Wow. I think we really got. I mean, I had Carlos Miller with strippers. I mean, wow. I've seen a lot of things on this show, but this was real, man.
Thanks,
this was real.
Dude. I appreciate that.
That's why I was excited to have you on here because I knew you're newer to comedy and you've seen a lot of cool things already and you're still just getting started. So I think just keep in mind, like, you're 4 years, dude.
Yeah, I feel like incredible. I just keep getting thrown in the deep end and people yelling at me to swim.
Well, yeah, and then you
just
figure it out.
Happening.
Yeah.
It keeps on happening. Whenever I was LA, I got in really big, weird situations just a year into comedy. And then the featuring at 2 years in, that was insane. And then now, like, Mothership 4 years in, it's just like a, you know, the first night I performed at Mothership, I followed Shane Gillis.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
And the little boy, dude.
That's amazing.
That was so crazy. It was after like a 2-hour show too. It was like everyone's like, you know, in the reaction Shane Gillis got whenever they called his name, it was like Eddie Murphy in the 80s, dude. Everyone's like, what the fuck? People were like, oh! And then they called mine. And by the way, Tony gave me like the worst injury. He's like, funny guy. Next comic. Yeah, CJ Landry, everybody. And then like right after Shane Gillis, and people were like, oh, what? The show's still, oh, okay.
Oh, man.
It was like that. Or I was like, ah.
Yep. Makes you stronger, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what they say.
It does, for sure. Yeah, you're doing great.
Thanks.
I'm excited to do more of these and keep checking in.
Dude, yeah.
I feel like every time I come to Austin, we got to do one to check in.
Yeah, let's do it.
Make sure you're still alive.
I'm down.
Make sure you haven't killed anyone.
Make sure I'm not back on the apps, the grocery apps.
That's hilarious, dude.
Yeah.
This was amazing.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad this happened. This was amazing.
It was fun.
What's the best place people are like, reach out to you. Yeah. If they listen to this and felt a certain type of way and want to reach out, what's the best way for people to contact you?
Yeah, Instagram, at the CJ Landry. Some bastard took CJ Landry. DM him as well. Tell him to delete his fucking account. I've already DM'd him a bunch, and he's not answering. He hasn't posted since 2018 with his weird face. Anyway, you can follow me there. I have a podcast that's called White Trashed, if you want to check that out. We're on YouTube and all that jazz.
I was on there, yeah.
And, I also did a stand-up on the spot with Jeremiah. That's on there. Just type in CJ Landry on YouTube, stand-up on the spot. Yeah, and that. If you're ever in town in Austin, hit me up. I'll help you get in the mothership if it's sold out. There's usually some standbys and... I usually help friends out get in and stuff, and hit me up, dude. Please, I need people. I need support. I need friends
positivity.
In Austin.
Send positivity towards CJ.
Send positivity, dude. Maybe send some fucking $5.
Yeah. You want to throw your Cash App out there? See their
if you got some organic tomatoes or something, you can send them my way. Some wings, maybe.
Well, man, keep up the great work, CJ. You're on to something great, man. Give yourself some credit there. You're on your way.
Appreciate it.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon, Joel.
Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.